Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Here we are for our sixth installment of Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. Who would have ever thought we had made it to six episodes?
A half dozen. Next thing you know, we'll be doing 106.
Let's just try to get to double digits. So our recap, in my opinion, awesome week for the Icemen. Win Thursday, win Saturday, loss on Sunday, bust legs, not worried about it, don't care.
Yeah.
But for the actual details of all that, Michael Shockley.
Well, we started things off Thursday in Cincinnati, beat the Cyclones 4-3. It was their first home loss, so that was something. The Cyclones were leading the division, still are leading the division. So that was a big win. It was tied 3-3 late, and Dan Ginder scored a power play goal with a minute 11 left in the game.
A Ginder sighting.
Yeah, he's alive. So that was definitely a solid win. Had Friday off, then went up Saturday to Fort Wayne, beat the Comets 5-0 with over 9,000 fans at the Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne. And among them was about two dozen Iceman fans who sat together and hooted and hollered and brought their cowbells. And apparently now there's threats from Fort Wayne to outlaw all noisemakers because of the Iceman fans and their cowbells.
You could hear the Iceman fans on the radio. Ficcarelli, I caught it just when the two shorthanded goals, and you know the barn goes dead on the shorty goal to make it 4-0, and you just hear woo and the cowbells clanking, and I thought, I know those people.
And that's the impressive thing about that is in Fort Wayne, the press box is about 9 miles from the ice, so for that to be picked up in the microphone, that tells you how loud they were. But I know from having gone up a couple years ago when the Icemen took a bus of fans up to Fort Wayne for a game, they have large crowds, but outside of when prompted, sometimes it's really quiet in there. You have 9,000 people in that building, and you'd think that it would be crazy loud. And they are when they do get loud, but they are not. I don't know if it's that PC nature of the way the Comets present things and trying to, you know, they don't want the fans chanting sucks, and they take out songs that the fans chant to and things like that. But it seemed like any time the Iceman fans would get a chant going, it went unanswered. And I don't know if that's how it was this time as well, but I know that when we were up there and had about 100 Iceman fans, we were louder than the 9,000 Comets fans. And every time we would start chanting, "Let's go Iceman," the Comets fans would look over at us and give us ugly looks, but they wouldn't actually respond with chants of their own. So it's pretty cool that, you know, two dozen can go in there, and you never know how much of an effect that has on the team. You go into a building that you had played in a couple times this year and lost, and when you can go up there and deliver a 5-0 spanking.
That no one could have predicted.
No, most certainly not Mr. Benigni with a prognostication I received via email before that game that...
And I purposely sent it. I rushed to get to email to send that out because I predicted the Iceman loss. And,
yeah.
I'm 0-2 on the year.
Yeah. Oh, well. Just don't go to Vegas anytime
yeah.
soon. So, yeah, the Iceman beat the Comets 5-0. The big story in that game was Paul Karpowicz got the 23-save shutout and... prove that he can be equal to the task of Rob Medor's highlight making saves lately. So that was very good. Hopefully that will boost his confidence. The interesting thing was, typically in hockey, when a goalie gets a shutout, he gets the next start. But because of the bus ride back from Fort Wayne and the short turnaround time with Sunday's game against Reading starting at 5, Crom went with Rob Medor again in net on Sunday. But the way the team ran out of gas in the third period, it was 2-2 after two, and you thought maybe we might sneak out of here and get a fourth straight win. But they just ran out of gas in the third period, and it wouldn't have mattered if Patrick Waugh was standing there, and we would have lost that game because it was clear by the third period that they were out of legs. They had nothing left. At that point, you're down to nine forwards and four defensemen.
Yeah, missing your top-line center on top of it.
Yeah, and Todd Robinson had gone out with an injury, which we'll get to in a moment. But that was a pretty decent performance because the Icemen played not very well in the first period. They kind of had bus legs, but they picked it up in the second, and they came back from down 2-0. They tied it at 2-2.
I was sitting there when they tied it up 2-2, and I thought Brian Patafi has got some magic cream or something in that room because they were just exhausted. You could see that. They go down 2-0, and they battled back.
Yeah.
And it was, and I thought Brian Patafi is the greatest, and then the wheels came off, and Todd Robinson got injured, so that just allowed me to throw Patafi under the bus.
Yeah, and that we shouldn't discount the fact that Reading is a good team. That was their ninth straight win. That's a really good team. They know what they're doing. They got talent, and you know, they deserve to win that game. But the fact that the Icemen were already shorthanded, then you lose Todd Robinson, and on top of it, the reason why we lost Todd Robinson was because the ice was in terrible shape.
Oh, did that cause the injury?
Yes, that was what happened.
Oh my gosh.
The ice was in terrible shape. From what I heard, there was a chiller valve in the refrigeration system under the ice that broke, and it was not fixed. So the ice was in awful shape. It was really chippy. There were chunks coming out of it. And there was
a huge chunk right by us on the blue line.
Yeah, and you could it was down to the paint.
Yep.
You could clearly see the paint. So you've probably got, I don't know, at least a quarter to 3/8 of an inch of ice that was just gone. That was exposing
that. It's at, over at Swanner, they shoot for 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch.
Above the paint?
Yes.
Ah. So yeah, that was not good, and you could tell that the ice was really chippy, and there were ruts, and
Reading players were falling all over the place.
Yeah, it was not good. And what happened was in the second period, Todd got hit, and in the process of trying to reestablish his balance after getting hit, his skate caught a rut and twisted his knee and screwed it up. He was already in a knee brace after the game when I saw him in the locker room, and I asked him what exactly happened because I couldn't tell at the time what happened, and I thought maybe it was the hit itself before he went down that had screwed something up his back or what, but obviously I saw the knee brace on him and realized it was a knee problem, not a back problem, and I asked him what happened, and in let me clean the language up in this. He said there was the ice was a flipping joke, and he flipped up his knee as a result.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So does the FCC.
Yeah. So he was not happy with the ice conditions, and it delayed the game 4 times. They had to bring out the snow cone crew and drop some snow from the Zamboni into it, and use water bottles. It was a mess.
I was sitting with Matt Space's wife at the game, and Matt's down there on all fours, the linesman, shoveling snow out there, basically making ice.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You like that, don't you?" Him all on all fours with the mop. She's like, "Yeah, why can't he do that in my kitchen?"
Yeah. Well, maybe she's not paying him enough in the kitchen.
I guess not.
At least he's getting paid when he's out there on the ice. But, that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, I think. Todd, the early indication is that he may have torn his MCL. We don't have confirmation on that yet. But if that's the case, you're looking at probably 6 to 8 weeks minimum before he'll be able to come back. And even then, he may not be 100% for a little while once he does come back. So the anti-Todd Robinson crowd is going to get to see what this team looks like without him. And while he's a minus 16, which is the worst in the league of all the players in the ECHL, he also was the team's leading scorer and the captain and the top face-off guy for the team. And I think people are going to find out what this team looks like without him. And I don't know that that the results are going to be as positive as people think they might be.
Let me back up for a second. I want to bring up, I love the Ford Center. I love what the city of Evansville has done for hockey in this place. And that facility is amazing. But their ice crew over there really, really struggles. They're really bad, and they need to be brought up. Last year, I can't remember her name right off the top of my head. She's one of the goal judges. Is it Linda? But anyway, she worked for the city. And she had to send an email to somebody because the goal lights wouldn't work. And finally, they kept going to the Ford Center maintenance, so they wouldn't fix the goal light. They wouldn't look at it. And finally, she rattled enough cages over at the city that the city made them do it. It was a burnout light bulb. It took multiple games last year for them to change a burnout light bulb. And the ice, and the one thing I'm not surprised why the ice is bad is Swander went through a learning curve. These players are so strong that they chew up the ice so much that you have to overflood after practices.
Yeah.
And this year, the Icemen have stayed at the Ford Center for a lot of their practices. They haven't practiced at Swander as much as they did in the past. And I don't think they kept up with the abuse that the team does just in a normal practice.
Yeah, there's a lot of ruts in it. You can see where guys have skated through. And even when you first get there after the ice has been flooded and set up for a while, it's totally frozen. There's no standing water left, but you can still see ruts. And I think, yeah, that's a sign that they're not maintaining it the way it needs to be maintained. And in game as well, when you have part of the problem is that the Iceman promotional department books on ice promotions during intermissions that take too long, and it doesn't allow time for the ice to set up properly.
I noticed our favorite PA, the man of the Golden Pipes, Stephen Rickard, was, you know, monitoring, policing that, saying, hey, we got to get going, we got to get going.
Right.
So obviously it is something that's on the Iceman radar.
Yeah, because you can't, you know, you want to have all that periphery stuff that's fun and makes it part of the show, but you can't sacrifice the quality of the game and the safety of the players just so that you have an extra game on the ice during intermission. And there's been too many times, I think, where we've seen 6, 7, 8 minutes left on the clock by the time the Zamboni finally gets out there.
Yep.
And then they're rushing and they're cutting it and they're putting too much water down and it doesn't have time to set up. And
well, yeah, even, you know, start of the third period, Matty Spaeth and the other linesmen had the squeegees out there. They basically had to squeegee off the water from the entire playing surface.
Yeah, and that's happened multiple times this year, and that's just ridiculous. And part of it is that they have two Zambonis, and half the time they don't use them, and half the time when they do use them, they don't use them properly. They'll only have one of them out there do a couple laps, and then he pulls off for reasons unbeknownst to me. And it's like, if you've got two Zambonis, use them. Use them right. And I don't know if it's that there's some sort of equipment reason why they don't do it, or if they're not fully trained on how to do the full ice with both Zams or what, but something has to give, because we can't keep having it where the Zamboni is pulling off the ice with a minute and a half left in the intermission, and it's just a pool out there, because it's terrible. It's holding games up. It's making for unfair playing conditions and unsafe playing conditions, and you can't sacrifice the game itself for anything else that's going on.
All right, now that we're off topic completely.
That's what we do here.
It's what we do here. You want to talk about some injuries? It's been a while since I've seen a team at any level of hockey get hit with the injury bug as bad as this team has gotten hit. And not to mention, not only us, but like Peoria. You talked about last week about Peoria and all the injuries they have there, and it's just weird when it gets fluky like that.
Yeah. Peoria's got all their problems with guys being injured, so then they've called up all the guys that they can call up from us. And before we get into the injuries, I know it was a topic of conversation on Facebook. Someone said, well, can't the Blues do something more to help Peoria and by extension help us? And there actually isn't. I did a little research online, and it turns out that every waiver-exempt two-way player that the Blues have, meaning guys that have an NHL-AHL two-way contract, who can be sent down to the AHL and then not have to clear waivers to re-enter the NHL after the lockout, every player that is waiver-exempt has already been sent down to Peoria. So they don't really have any more reinforcements they can send down. There are other guys that have two-way contracts, but they would have to clear waivers to come back after the lockout, and they're not going to take that risk.
No.
So,
no, you can't do
so
that.
So the Blues have done what they
not,
can do.
Not to help out an ECHL
right,
team.
Right. So the Blues have done everything they can do to help out Peoria. So Peoria is kind of on their own. That's why they've called up so many guys from here. So, you know, when you're at the bottom of the food chain, that's what happens. When Peoria calls up all your guys, you have to figure out ways to survive without them and hope that in time Peoria can get healthy and then send a few guys back down. But, it's been ridiculous, especially the last week or so. I did all the adding, and through 16 games, the Icemen have already lost 44 man games to injury. And that number is going to go up exponentially faster now because of all the injuries of the last week. But it's been so bad between all the call-ups from Peoria and all the injuries we've had here that in 16 games so far this season, we have never once iced the same 18-man lineup for more than two games in a row.
Yeah. And again, we go back to chemistry and everything else.
And when you have that kind of turnover, even if it's just one guy each night, it's hard to build chemistry. And then on top of building chemistry, just because of the injuries and call-ups, you're dealing with less talented pieces because some of the more talented pieces have gotten called up and gotten hurt. And that just complicates matters even more. But to go through the roll call of all the injuries, Austin Medeski last played on November 10th against South Carolina. He had an MRI that, as Brian Patafi revealed on the amusement park last week, revealed a torn ligament in his wrist. And he has been placed on the IR and will likely require season-ending surgery. Also on defense, Phil Plante was placed on the IR on Thursday before the game at Cincinnati. He has a ruptured disc in his back with a chip that is hitting on nerve. And he's likely going to need surgery, which
he actually has started.
Has he already?
Yep.
And that will, the early word I heard was probably 2 months or more on him. So we're going to be out without Plante for a while. Jake Obermeyer broke his foot Thursday at Cincinnati. He's been placed on the IR and is out indefinitely. Aaron Jens broke his hand Saturday at Fort Wayne. He's also out indefinitely, but the early word was that he may be able to be fitted with a special cast that will allow him to play through it in 2 or 3 weeks. So he may return sooner than some of the others. Then on Sunday, Todd Robinson screwed up his knee. Like we said before, the initial word was possibly a torn MCL, which you're looking at probably 6 to 8 weeks, if not more. Anton Blomqvist, you said, is not going to make this road trip because of hip and back and groin injury.
Yeah, it all started with the groin. And if anyone's ever had to fight through a groin injury, because it affects the pelvis, and Patafi made the joke last week, you know, that old song, the hip bone's connected to the backbone and all that. It is all connected. And when you get something out of tweaked, out of context, out of its normal thing, that can lead to other areas. So he's got hip, lower back, hamstring, all because of an initial groin injury.
Yeah. Well, and think about it, too. If you ever have had a groin pull, just think about how that affects the things you do at home. And then consider trying to play a professional hockey game with that injury.
Well, and there's, you know, even running is different because, you know, that hockey stride is more focused on the groin and pelvis area, whereas running, you know, playing football or whatever else, that's more your quads and mm-hmm. your calves. So that side-to-side motion just continues to exaggerate that issue.
Yeah, and it takes a while sometimes for that to heal up. You can't come back too soon. And then you're really in a heap of trouble if you come back too soon and do more damage, and it just prolongs the recovery process. So that's unfortunate. And then we have breaking news. As we record this on Tuesday, Mr. Benigni has breaking news regarding another new injury. What is that?
Well, I was out at practice today just keeping a look at the guys, trying to see what we have left. And Mark Cody came off the ice, not sure what it was. Rumor was potential separated shoulder. Don't have any information or anything like that, but chances are he's not in the lineup at least for Wednesday.
Yeah. So so add another one. We were joking before we came on the air that the Icemen may need to change their logo again, and this time change it to the handicap symbol. And at the rate things are going, who knows? This is getting ridiculous. Like you said, it's rare to see so many injuries hit, especially in such a short amount of time. That you look basically. In the last week, we've lost, what, 5, 6 guys?
Yeah.
And most
three
of them
in a
are
row.
Gonna, yeah, and most of them are going to be long-term. Yeah. So it's going to completely turn this team upside down, and you're going to have to bring new guys in and try to establish a new set of chemistry now. And like I said in a story on IcemanManiacs.com about all these injuries, we talked about how chemistry is going to be so key and finding the right recipe. And it's hard to find the right recipe when the ingredients are constantly changing. And that's going to be the challenge that Crom faces as the season goes forward, because you're probably looking at the All-Star break at the earliest before you're going to be getting most of these guys back. So they've got to somehow find a way to stay within shouting distance of a playoff spot if they want to make the playoffs within the next month and a half to 2 months, and then hopefully try to get healthy and make a run late. But in addition to the health here, we also have to hope Peoria can get healthy, and maybe we'll get a few guys back from them, and that could help. But in the meantime, it's going to be pretty dicey.
You wanted to bring up some transactions.
Yeah, the move that the Icemen made last Thursday before Cincinnati, the game at Cincinnati, they signed Derek Foam, a defenseman who was in the SPHL with the Huntsville Havoc. And if that seems kind of random to people, it's really not, because Huntsville is where Jordan Little is now working. He's the assistant
coach.
This
is why you are on this show.
Yeah.
This is why you make me look good.
Well, I'm not a miracle worker. I don't know about that.
Yeah, boom.
But, yeah, Huntsville is where Jordan Little is the assistant coach and the manager of hockey operations. So even though we don't officially have an affiliate in the SPHL, that's Crom's probably his go-to place of if we're in a bind, he can call Jordy and say, I really need someone. We're in a world of hurt up here. And that's probably what happened here, is Jordy probably recommended Derek Foam. And that's not your DJ name, is it, Derek Foam?
No, my DJ name is the Dirty D.
The Dirty D. I don't know. I think Derek Foam, you could host a show about drinking and be Derek Foam.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that. We were at the game on Sunday. My wife said, his last name really is Foam? And I said, well, yeah, granted, it's no Vogelhuber, but...
No. Yeah, Foam doesn't exactly sound tough. He should sign an endorsement deal with Nerf.
You could.
Yeah. So that was the news before. We've got some more guys that are going to be coming in this week, but at this juncture, we just don't know anything about them.
I pulled up on the Iceman, the Maniac Asylum. His name is Sean Whitney, a defenseman traded to Evansville from San Francisco. Hmm. So, and he played, looks like he played at Cornell last year. So,
and you said we got a guy from Missouri too?
Yes. Brian Patafi set it up. He's like, we got a guy. He's played in the C. He's from Missouri. No, it isn't Brian Bisek. But yeah, they got a defenseman out of Missouri that just came up this morning to make the trip.
Cool. So yeah, the reinforcements are coming, but it's gonna be a little while before we really see what we've got there. Another thing on the transaction front I wanted to touch on is Nathan Moon. There was a lot of confusion about how exactly the Icemen acquired him, because the AHL says the Springfield Falcons reassigned him from Cincinnati to Evansville. But the Icemen, when they announced that we had acquired him, said that we acquired him in a trade. Now, they didn't actually say what we traded to get him, though.
I don't ask those kind of questions. I'm just happy to,
happy to get a player like that.
Yeah.
Well, me being the transaction nerd that I am, I ask those questions.
Senior writer.
Yeah. So... I got in touch with the PR broadcasting guy from the Cyclones and said, what exactly happened here? How did we acquire him? Because of the conflicting reports of how it happened. Well, what he said was the Cyclones owned his ECHL contract rights. Springfield owned his AHL contract rights. So at the higher level, he's Springfield property. But in order to send him to the Icemen, the Icemen first had to acquire his contract rights for the ECHL from Cincinnati. So, in a way, both reports were correct. What happened was the Icemen sent future considerations.
Which is going to be the next time we have a player here and we have his ECHL rights.
Well,
but
probably.
It's an affiliate to Cincy.
Yeah.
It could be that.
It could be cash. It could be any number of things. You know, there's no draft picks at this level, so you never know what it could be. And it could end up being nothing. There was one of the trades we made in the CHL. We owed, I think it was Laredo, that we owed future considerations for Jeff Harvey. And at the end of the season, they just said, we don't want anything. So it's, at times, if it's a minor deal like that, you may not really have to give anything up. But we don't know what the deadline is or what the details of that are. But we sent future considerations to Cincinnati. That allowed us to acquire his ECHL contract rights. That then allowed Springfield to call him up and reassign him to Evansville. So it was both a reassignment and a trade. So both reports were correct. It was just a little foggy as to how exactly that happened. So I want to thank Nick Brunker, I believe is his name, from Cincinnati. We exchanged several emails, and he was really nice. And he said he was looking forward to coming over here to see the Ford Center, and I told him, I hope you like it, because you're going to see a lot of it, because we play the Cyclones a lot this season. So,
and that's when we talked about that before, about being a good affiliate. And you can't, you know, these players are sent down to you. Crom's role is to develop them so that they can get back to the AHL level. And this is just another part of it, that somewhere down the road, we're going to have a guy that is a Nathan Moon character, really good player, and because of his rights being owned by someone else and affiliates changing, there's going to be a team that's going to want him, and we're going to have to give him up the same way Cincy kind of did this to give him up just so that he could be in his affiliate's organization.
Right. And that's just part of the game at this level. You have guys come and go, and you'll get players that aren't even your property for times. But then if they rightfully belong to someone else, then, you could see a guy go that you don't want to see go. But that's just how it is.
Yep. Our next segment, potentially the best segment, because neither one of us is talking.
I think it's always the best segment.
Shockers. Hockey. Rock Song of the Week.
Well, thank you, Derek Foam. I mean, Dirty D. This week's Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week. This is a song I used to play at Swander, usually as a second period introduction song when the team came out from the locker room, because at the time, the Icemen wore black jerseys, at least sometimes at home. And now they wear blue, so it's not really an applicable song for the current music guy to play when the Icemen are playing, even though it has been played on occasion when we're playing a team that's wearing black, which is kind of odd. But this is Back in Black by AC/DC, and not only was it a great song to come out to, and it's a great song in general, but I suppose this is also a bit of a tribute to Black Friday coming up, when all of the retail stores hope and pray that they're going to get back in the black. So again, this is AC/DC, Back in Black.
I hit the sand, I've been to
And we're back here on Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, webmaster and senior writer for IcemanManiacs.com. And what's next on our sheet here? Oh, yeah. The Comets. Glad we beat them.
They suck.
They do suck. But actually, they don't suck. They're actually a really good team.
Pretty good, yeah.
One of the things I noticed was I just was browsing through their team, the statistics and stuff, and I remember Brandon Marino last year from the CHL. He had 41 goals on the season. Was he first or second in scoring? Did Robinson end up beating him?
He was first in goals.
Okay, yeah, I knew he was first in goals, but he and Robinson were neck and neck all season
long. I
think
Todd ended up winning by a couple points just because he had so many assists.
But and then also Eric Gyosa, who came down and played fantastic. And one of the things I started going through the old CHL statistics, and these guys, Brandon Marino, topping goals in his league, number two in scoring for the league. Eric Gyosa had 28-30 goals. And these are the kind of free agents that Fort Wayne brought into their existing system that won the championship. The Icemen, on the flip side, they bring in Dan Gender, which was a decent move, but he only had 20 goals last year, I think.
He had a lot of assists. He was a 70-some point guy, but he was number one on his team.
He was number one on his team, but then the other guys we've brought in, Dale Mahovsky, Jason Dale, which, don't get me wrong, they're fantastic players, but they were fifth in scoring on their teams, respectively. So you see right there, you know, everyone wants to talk about Coach Crom and his coaching style and why isn't this team winning. Well, before we even get to that, let's look at the talent that ownership has brought in the offseason. And this part of this thinking was spurred. I had heard a rumor that Brandon Marino was in town over the summer. They showed him the Ford Center. They showed him around town, and they gave him a contract offer. Fort Wayne gave him a better offer, and that's why he ended up in Fort Wayne. So that started me thinking, well, let's look at what we have on this club. And I think Jason Dale Mahovsky throws his weight around. They're both great penalty killers, but they are second line, maybe third liners at this level. And there isn't, you know, it was a young Brian Bicek that Coach Crom brought with him from Muskegon that exploded into being one of the best players we've ever seen in this town. So, you know, Mahovsky and Dale, they may become, you know, we talked about that in our first or second show. Who is the future Brian Bicek? But it's a lot easier when you can write a check for a Brandon Marino that has scored 41 goals in a season to expect him to do that again.
Yeah, and I think part of it is just a philosophical difference in the way the teams are built. Fort Wayne made a conscious decision, we're going to build forwards first. They brought back six of their top seven scoring forwards from last season. We only brought back two forwards and Mark Cody, who is a role player, an enforcer type. But the only two forwards that took a regular shift last season that we brought back were Todd Robinson and Josh Beaulieu. And Todd was first on the team, obviously, in scoring. And Beaulieu, I believe, was fourth. I think Lindbergh and Bicek were both ahead of him in points. Beaulieu was second in goals on the team. But I think the Icemen made more of a conscious effort to build from the defense out. They used three of their four veteran spots on D. They brought back three defensemen from last season's team while only bringing back three forwards, one of them being Cody, who's just expected to play a very certain role on this team. And I think the Comets took the opposite approach to it. I think they only brought one defenseman back, and the rest of their returnees were forwards, and good ones at that. They brought back Colin Chalk and Chris Auger and Brett Smith and some of the other role players, the Kaylee Schrocks, the Jean-Michael Rizik, mm-hmm. I believe that's what his name is, Stefan Thorne. They brought back a bunch of these guys that were first and second line players for them last year, and that allows you a larger core of players to implement the same system that brought you success. That was a championship team last year. And while this is a different league, it's still a team that's got that playoff testing under their belts. They know what they need to do to win. And I think that fundamental difference in the way the teams were built is showing a lot. The Comets are winning by scoring a lot of goals, but they're also winning by having really solid goaltending. And the Icemen have gotten solid goaltending here and there. It hasn't been as consistent, which is to be expected with a couple of rookies. But I think just the big difference is that the Icemen built really more focused on defense whereas the Comets built more focused on offense. And not only the six guys that they brought back from their team, but Marino and Chiosa are very good players as well. I actually looked up the stats for the top five forwards for each team that were returning from the CHL. If you consider Colin Chalk, Chris Auger, Brett Smith, Brandon Marino, and Eric Chiosa, those five forwards, the top five for Fort Wayne. Last year in the CHL, they averaged 1.13 points per game, which is really solid.
Yeah.
Those five, so 1.13 times five. So those five guys are averaging more than 5 points a game. And then on top of that, this year they've dropped some. They're down to 0.94 points per game, but that's about in line. It's a 17% drop. That's about in line with past what we've seen of other teams. When Rapid City moved from the CHL to the ECHL, their top players dropped about 15 to 20%. So that's about to be expected. The top five forwards for the Icemen, if you count Todd, Beaulieu, Gender, Mahovsky, and Dale, so the two guys that they brought back plus the top three free agent signings from the CHL that they are counting on to produce offense, the five of them produced 0.97 points per game last season, which is a fairly big drop from the 1.13 that Fort Wayne's top five had. But the biggest thing is this season, those five have dropped all the way to 0.63 points per game.
And then you take Robinson out of this equation.
And now you take Todd out, and he was by far the top producer. I mean, he was over a point per game last year, and he was right at a point per game this year before he got hurt. So that that big drop, that's a big gap in offense. And unless you're veteran-laden defense and your goaltending is really going to carry you, which has not been the case so far this year, you're going to struggle. And that's I think that's the big difference, is just the focus. It's A, bringing guys in that you know and bringing guys back from your system that are familiar with your town and your city and the system and the coaching and everything, but also just the focus on Fort Wayne decided we're going to build offense first and the rest will sort itself out. And the Icemen were the exact opposite. Todd was a big piece to bring back. Beaulieu is a very good player to bring back. But the focus was clearly on defense. And so far, I don't know that that's really worked out. And now with Plante being hurt, I don't know that we're fully going to see. But I think that's also the fact that Todd and Plante were already locked in for this season. I think that takes away a little bit of the flexibility of what they may have had as far as salary in order to try to lure a guy like a Brandon Marino here. And, you know, maybe because Todd and Plante were already coming back at their stage in their careers, I'm sure they're getting paid fairly well for this level. So it's not like they're getting rich, but they're going to be toward the top of the individual salaries in this league. And because of the money that was probably already committed to them, that means you may not have the money to bring in a Brandon Marino. You may not have the money to throw at a Brian Bisek, even though you would like to have him back. So that kind of changes the way you have to build your team. And it'll be interesting to see next season, A, if they bring Todd Robinson back for another season, and B, if Plante decides to continue playing, will they want to bring him back as well? And what they decide with those will go a long way in deciding what they could do with their other veteran spots and their other high salary spots.
And the reason I bring it up is I think it's very fun to play armchair coach, and I think it's very fun to play armchair GM. And we've got a great listening audience. We have a smart hockey base here, IcemanManiacs.com, Maniac Asylum. And I guess the question I throw out there is, as this season goes on, you can follow the league leaders in the ECHL. You can follow the league leaders in the CHL. And what of those guys do you want the Icemen to make a run at next year, next offseason, to bring into town?
Yeah. And you wonder if maybe we haven't seen the last of Brian Bisek. He said one of the things he wanted to go to Missouri for was he wants to contend for a championship. He didn't want to be part of a rebuilding year. And while we would love to see the Icemen succeed and win a championship this year, that's probably not in the cards. Hopefully we can be in contention for a playoff spot, but this is not a team that's going to go out there and run through the playoffs and win the championship in all likelihood. So I don't blame him for wanting to go to Missouri when the money wasn't here, wanting to go somewhere where he knew he could win. And you wonder if in another year, if the rebuilding process here takes a step forward, if maybe some money comes off the books in other players that were getting paid high salaries that aren't going to be around, then do they make a run at seeing if Bisek would want to come back? Because he's familiar with the building, he's familiar with the fans. And I think a player like that with that kind of speed is the type of player that could succeed in this league.
Definitely. Definitely. What's next on the list? Oh, courier and press coverage that we kind of threw under the bus last week.
Yeah, we talked about the courier and press last week, and there was a couple other things. There was a lot of talk about that on Facebook over the last couple weeks.
I put a post on there because there were some more frustrated fans after, was it Thursday's win or Saturday's win, that they were complaining about lack of courier press article. But then I went to the Iceman webpage, the actual EvansvilleIceman.com, and they hadn't updated their story since Sunday's win over the South Carolina Stingray. So I think, you know, as much as the fans are complaining and everything else, your organization kind of needs to get their webmaster to get things out first and foremost and allow the newspapers to steal that information, I think.
Yeah. Not,
you know what I mean by steal.
Yeah.
You know,
you send it to them, I use it.
Yeah, if you can't get it up on your own website, maybe you shouldn't be complaining about the paper so much.
Yeah, well, part of the problem, I think, is sometimes there's stuff posted to the Iceman website that gets buried on a news page but doesn't actually get featured on the front page, and then people just pull up the front page, don't see anything new, and assume there's nothing there. But there's been times this year where I've noticed that too, where the top story on the front page is a week or two old, but if you click on news, the game coverage is there for the last few games. And I don't know, that's just, I don't know. Don't get me started about the X-Men website. That's
no.
Sort of a sore subject.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go that far. I was just not in defense of the Courier Press, but let's bring all the apples on the table and look at everything.
Well, and in defense of the Courier and Press, at the risk of being a Courier and Press apologist, which I've been called, I've also been called...
Wow!
I've been called a Courier and Press apologist. I've also been called Randy Beer's cheerleader.
Woohoo!
And trust me, you don't want to see me in a cheerleader outfit. But
and I do like Randy Beard. He's an awesome guy. He's been around for a long time, and he's helped out the Iceman quite a bit back in the Swander days.
And I think that's what people need to understand. Is Randy Beard always 100% positive cheerleader for the Iceman? No, but that's not his job.
Yep.
He's a journalist. He's not always supposed to be happy-go-lucky, oh, everything's great, even if the team's losing. He's a journalist. His job is to report the facts. And maybe sometimes those facts are tinged with a little bit of negativity, but that's just the way it is in journalism. Sometimes you're going to get a little more negative of a lean than you maybe deserve, and sometimes you're going to get more of a positive lean. If the story that we had for Sunday's game, we lost 7-2, and Steve Ford wrote a very fair article talking about the bus legs, and he didn't throw the team under the bus for a 5-goal loss at home like he very well could have. And that, in general, is the way the Courier's coverage goes. I think, for the most part, there are exceptions both ways, but for the most part, it's fair. But what people need to understand is there's this conspiracy that they only cover us when we lose. Well, people need to understand how newspapers work. They don't decide who's getting what slot after the results come in. If we play a game on a Saturday, by Saturday at noon, every writer knows what they're writing about, and that paper, that sports section, is essentially laid out already. This game is going to get this slot. This game is going to get this slot. So they know long before the puck ever drops whether or not, A, the Icemen are going to get a full story or just a brief, B, where that story is going to be, how long it's going to be, if it's going to get a photo. All that stuff is determined long before the game happens. So there is no conspiracy against the team based on whether or not they win or lose. Now, I admit, and I've told Randy Beard this myself, that I think the Icemen should be a higher priority than they are. I don't think we should take a back seat to IU football. I don't think we should. I really don't think we should take a back seat to anything. As far as I see it, when you're a AA professional hockey team and you're the number one professional franchise in your city, you should be priority number one in a perfect world. But this is Evansville. Evansville loves its high school sports and its college sports, and that's just not going to happen. No matter how much you or I think it shouldn't, that's just not going to happen. The Icemen are going to continue to be middle of the priority list at best. So we need to take what we can get. But I think people need to, A, drop the conspiracy talk, because there is no such conspiracy. What we are given, long before the game starts. Guess what? We got a giant story on Sunday. It had an above-the-fold headline and a big color picture on the front page of the sports section. And if the Icemen had won that game, everybody would have said, well, it's about time. But the Icemen lost the game. And it's not like the positioning changed because the Icemen lost the game. It was going to be there with a photo one way or the other, and it just happens that the Icemen lost the game. So maybe we need to get into the fact that whether or not the courier being there is bad luck, because it does seem like every time they're there, we lose. But it's not a conspiracy, and people need to back off a little bit. I understand being frustrated that we don't get all the coverage we want. You know, in a perfect world, it'd be like Fort Wayne, where we've got both of the newspapers in Fort Wayne cover every single Comets game. They have blogs written by the beat writers online that offer even more coverage. But that's just not what's going to happen here.
Well, that's what 70 years of hockey in the town will do.
Yeah, and Fort Wayne's a different type of market, too. They have that history, so the Comets are part of the fabric of the community at this point. And in Evansville, while the Icemen are drawing well at the gate, they're still... When you consider alumni bases and people that have just lived here and followed the high school and college games forever, they have a larger in general readership. And that's why I tell people, if you are not happy about the coverage we're getting from the Courier, don't flood Randy Beard's inbox with complaints. What you need to do is go online, and when there's a story about the Icemen on CourierPress.com, comment on it. Look at it. Read it. Because they see individual views for each story, and they see the number of comments for each story. And we can argue until we're blue in the face saying that the Icemen deserve more coverage, but if a Wrights High School football story gets 40 comments and an Icemen story gets 2, guess what they're going to give more priority the next time the two are head-to-head? It's as simple as that. Yep. You got to put
it's all about readership. It's all about money.
Right. And it's not that Randy Beard hates the Icemen. In fact, he's been one of our biggest advocates in that office. He's the guy that came to Swanard covered games when the Courier didn't want us in there at all. And he's the guy that has pushed for getting a beat writer that's dedicated to the Icemen. Now, it's not in the budget, but he's the one who's pushing for that. So he's not enemy number one. People need to treat him with a little more respect. And if you want to complain to him, then do so in a constructive, positive manner. Because we don't want to make an enemy out of the Courier and Press. They need to be an ally. And if you complain too loudly and too negatively, you're going to turn them into an enemy. So... read what they do, thank them when they do give us coverage, ask for more, but do so in a positive way, and more than anything, comment on the stories that are out there, because if they see those stats and there's proof that the Icemen deserve eyeballs, we'll eventually get eyeballs. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen in time, and I think people just, this whole conspiracy thing and acting like that they have some sort of grudge against the Icemen, that couldn't be farther from the truth. And people just need to back off a little bit, be thankful for what you have, ask for more, but don't go overboard with it.
I remember an incident last year, first game of the year, Ford Center, that kind of goes along with this. There was a brand new PA announcer that the Ford Center hired, and his name was Tommy. And he had a real hard time with all the last names, and he didn't quite understand the game and what his timing was. And so many people hated him. He's got to get fired, blah, 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 blah. Now Tommy is one of us. It just took him a little bit of time to figure out how to do the game and everything else. And he's fantastic, and he's one of us. And the Courier Press is the same way. You got to understand their point of view from their shoes and what their requirements are.
Exactly. And, you know, ultimately it's about attracting eyeballs and what's going to sell newspapers and attract hits online. And whether we think the Icemen should be the number one priority or not is irrelevant. It's what sponsors and the people that are paying basically
for advertising.
That's where newspapers make their money. They don't make their money on subscriptions. You know, that's 75 cents you pay to buy the print edition of the Courier. That's a blip on the radar. It's the advertisers that really matter, whether we like it or not. That's just how the industry is. So if the advertisers know that covering amateur sports is going to get more eyeballs for their ads than covering the Icemen, that's how it's going to be until we prove that the Icemen do generate that sort of response and that sort of readership, because it's ultimately a business, and people need to remember that. It's not about grudges. It's not about some goofy conspiracy. It's just that it's a business, and they have to run it like a business, whether we like it or not. But in kind of as a follow-up to talking about Tommy, that's the same way with the Courier writers. We talked a little bit last week about you and I have both taken part in explaining things to the Courier's writers, and that's not meant to be a negative thing. The good thing is, if they have somebody at the press box and they're asking good questions, I'm all for that. I will sit there and explain as much as it takes to get the right information in the story. I'd rather them ask, even if they think it's a dumb question, I'd rather them ask the question, get the answer, and have it right, than not ask a question, be ignorant, and put something that makes no sense in the paper. And to their credit, this year, with Randy Beard now being the sports editor, he hasn't been at any of the games, but Steve Ford and Jonathan Lintner have both been at a lot of the games. And they both fully admitted when they came up for their first game this year that they don't know hockey. But they both sat there, and to their credit, they asked smart questions, and I would do everything I could to help them. And there were times when they would ask a question, and what I explained to them would show up in the article. So I think just because they don't know the sport doesn't mean that's a bad thing, because there's a lot of new Iceman fans that when they first came didn't know the sport. But over time, you pick it up, and then just like Tommy Mason, you become part of it. And the same thing applies to the media, in that while they're not fans, they over time will pick up the game as they watch it more and they cover it more. And that's just part of the maturation of Evansville as a hockey market.
I still don't understand ever covering IU football. Ever since Antoine Randall L. left, is there anything up there?
Well, I don't think that should be a priority either. But
I mean, I understand IU basketball. Yeah. I understand Purdue football. Right. I don't understand IU. IU football doesn't understand IU football, do they?
No, but I think, and I talked to Randy Beard after last week's show, and he said that he was actually, the only reason IU football got the coverage they got that day was he had already been in Bloomington to cover the IU basketball game the night before.
So he
stayed over that morning and worked the IU football game and then came back to Evansville. And as I said last week, he was the one who was in the office that evening when the other four writers and the staff were out and about. And we've explained before, they only have five sports staffers. One of them has to be at the office, and Randy Beard was the one who was at the office that night. The other four were out covering other stuff. So even though they did cover five events in person that day, the one that Randy covered was early in the morning, and he was back that evening already in the office. So it's not like they somehow magically figured out a way to cover five things at once, and the Iceman should have had someone there. It's just, that's just part of scheduling.
It's economics, too.
Yeah.
You could do two trips, two sporting events in one trip.
Right.
You do them both. Mm-hmm. Throwing people under the bus.
It's what we do here.
That is what we
do. Oh, getting off topic.
I can't. That one's saved up for an interview later, so I can't even tell that Brian Patafi joke.
Oh.
But anyways.
Man. Is it an on-air Brian Patafi joke or an off-air Brian Patafi joke?
It's an on-air. It's part of the interview.
By the way, we need to mention, isn't Thursday Brian Patafi's birthday?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Mr. Patafi.
Happy birthday. Michael Shockley will be singing happy birthday at the end of this interview.
Yeah, off the air. So I need to throw two people under the bus, both of whom are in this room.
The first one
is me. I need to throw myself under the bus because last week I rattled off a bunch of stats about how team records so far this season are related to the number of transactions initiated by teams' affiliates and how the Icemen were leading the league in that, and that played a role in the fact that the team had been struggling. Well, I neglected to mention in that analysis that the idea for that stat and that research was actually inspired by my wife Amanda. And people who have been Iceman fans for a while might remember Amanda. She was at Swander, the official scorekeeper for the Iceman, so she was down in the scores box between the penalty boxes. Her partner in crime was one Stephen Rickard, and they were always down in the scores box together. And she mentioned that she wanted to know how the number of affiliates affected the record for teams in the ECHL. So I did a little research on that, and it wasn't 100% in support of the idea of more affiliates equals more turnover, because some teams that even have two affiliates just haven't had many transactions. So I took it a step further and did the research that I did that we talked about last week. But the idea was inspired by my wife Amanda, so I'm throwing myself under the bus for not giving her the credit that she is due last week, because I'm sick of sleeping on the couch.
He also calls you the B word off air.
Beautiful?
Yeah. Okay.
Beautiful. Beauty. That's a
beauty.
Derek Benigni word.
It is.
And then I also need to throw Mr. Benigni, the Dirty D, under the bus.
Horrible.
Because last week, people may have heard during Brian Patafi's interview on the amusement park, Mr. Benigni mentioned in passing that he had sustained some sort of groin injury or something of the like while figure skating at Swander. So Patafi let you off the hook. He didn't ask for any more details, but I immediately made note that I have to bring this up because I want to know details. I'm throwing you under the bus, Twinkle Toes, so I want details. How did you pull your groin while figure skating, and why were you figure skating in the first place?
First year that the Icemen were at Swander, their first year of existence, when the franchise was started, not according to some, but we can get into that another time. But when the franchise started, it was the same time that I started working at the pro shop. And Danielle Crook she's a figure skater. She's the assistant manager over there. She did tons of work helping to get the Iceman going and everything else. Well, she did tons of help. I could stock hockey skates and jocks and all that kind of stuff, but I had no idea what to stock for the figure skaters. So she did all kinds of work, research and everything else to help the pro shop get everything it needed for the figure skating element. Danielle is a figure skater, loves it, loved it her whole life. She loves pairs. There's not a lot of guys in the tri-state area that will skate pair skating. So I felt it was kind of my duty to put on the black figure skates and start working with her on some basic pair skating kind of stuff. Unfortunately, figure skates have toe picks.
Yes.
And it isn't a big difference until you catch that toe pick.
Yeah.
And we were working on just some small things. And I really liked it because it helped me. Aaron Nathan was a huge figure skater as well as hockey player. But you could learn things that figure skaters can do that they do to help them with their speeds and their turns and their jumps is applicable to playing hockey. And so that was part of the reason for doing it as well. But I was doing something. I caught the toe pick. I basically did the splits on the ice, and it messed up my groin so bad. And, of course, being the tough guy that I am, you fight through it. I was still jogging and everything else, and I knew I had a problem about 4 to 6 weeks later when I couldn't do a sit-up. I was going to work out, and I was going to start with some sit-ups, and I lay down on the floor, and I could not do one sit-up, and I knew I was in a lot of trouble.
That's unfortunate.
Yes. That is the figure skating.
You know,
story.
That inspires me. I think, do you think we have time to throw in a second Shockers Hockey Rock song of the week this week?
Yeah, because we can just make the amusement park go to 3 o'clock.
Okay. Then I think we need to take a quick break and play I Pulled My Groin by the Arrogant Worms.
I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. It's the very best injury, though I'm walking daintily. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. People ask it hurts you where. I say put your hand right there. I pulled my groin. 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 It hurts me when I'm walking, but I'm really happy talking about my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. It's the treatments that I love, cause I bought some oil to rub up on my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. Unless it's playoff time, then I've got a lower body injury that'll have to be a game time decision. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. It hurts me when I skate, but not when I master hills. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin. I pulled my groin.
And we're back with our third installment of Iceman Insights. Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster.
Well,
and
we had to throw in the bonus hockey song of the week, inspired by Derek Benigni's groin.
Nice. upcoming games.
We have...
There's a lot of dark blue on the schedule.
There's a big, long road trip. This is the season's longest road trip, 5 games. The Icemen have to vacate the premises because the Ford Center is taken over by the Shrine Circus, which, going forward, will presumably be the case every year during Thanksgiving time. So this 5-game road trip starts tonight, Wednesday, the 21st, at Wheeling. They are 3-7-3, so that's a winnable game if you can get enough healthy bodies to actually play the game. Then they take Thursday off for Thanksgiving, and then they're on the road Friday and Saturday. Friday is at Trenton, and Saturday is at Reading again, which will be another tough game. Hopefully someone will knock them off before then and slow their momentum a little bit, because that's a good team. That's going to be a tough game. But, that's the first 3 games of this 5-game trip. The Icemen aren't home again until Saturday, December 1st, when the Kalamazoo Wings come to town again. And that is Pack the House night and Star Wars night with a post-game jersey auction. And supposedly Darth Vader will be there to drop the ceremonial first puck.
He did that last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
I liked it.
So that should be fun. I don't know. Last I saw on Ticketmaster, it didn't look like it was probably going to sell out, but I think it should be a pretty good crowd. It's been probably a week or two since I checked, but the last I checked, they hadn't even opened the upper bowl yet. So I doubt it's going to sell out, so the house probably won't be packed, but hopefully it'll be a good crowd because it is a Saturday night. Close.
And it's that Star Wars night. I mean, even though first year we did it over at Swander, first year in the sea, it was huge.
Yeah. So. Oh, and it was cool, too, after that game when you're sitting out in the lobby and there's Star Wars characters all over the place. It was oh, hey, there's a stormtrooper behind
you. Yeah, there was like 10 stormtroopers there. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's maybe that should be a hockey team name. Maybe one of the A-League teams should be called the Stormtroopers.
That does harken back to Nazi Germany, I believe, is where the Stormtroopers term started from. So not lost on George Lucas, but lost on the rest of us. But that might be pushing it.
okay, well, never mind.
But anyways, Thanksgiving tomorrow. Hope you and your family have a good Thanksgiving.
You too, and everyone that's going to be traveling, travel safe. Enjoy your holiday. Don't gorge yourself too much on food. You only have about a week and a half after that to recover before the next Iceman game, so don't eat too much turkey and get overloaded with tryptophan.
I was teasing Brian Patafi that the Iceman will probably be stopping off at some China buffet somewhere in southern New Jersey for Thanksgiving.
Well, they will have some turkey and whatnot on the bus with them, because the Iceman Maniacs Booster Club every year provides some turkey and Thanksgiving-y foods for the bus trip when they take this long bus trip over Thanksgiving.
That's awesome. You guys think this stuff through, don't you?
Yeah, we actually put a little work into this. It's amazing. But just as a cheap plug for that, if you want to go to IcemanManiacs.com, there's information about the Booster Club. You can sign up. It's just $5 a person or $10 a family, and the money and cowbell sales money and all that stuff goes toward helping the players and little things behind the scenes that people might not think of, that giving the guys power bars and fresh fruit for games and things like that, and little Christmas gifts and whatnot. So nothing super significant, but there's just a lot of little things that the Booster Club tries to do, and our president, Dixie Halber, does a wonderful job. And like I said, if you want to join, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click on the Booster Club page, all the info's there, the forms that you need to fill out to join the club are there, so you can download everything, fill it out, send it in, or drop it by the Booster Club table at a game and buy another cowbell.
Last real quick story. We're at the game Sunday, and they got Brad Perkins on the Jumbotron, and he's banging his big old cowbell. And Ivy turns to me and says, "Why is he doing that?" And I'm explaining to my 5-year-old daughter, you know, it's an old hockey tradition that you shake your cowbell to celebrate your team. And she said, "Dad, I need a cowbell," so I have to remedy that before the next home game.
Yeah, you have to stop by the Booster Club table and get you
one. That's what I told her. I said, we have to go see Miss Dixie and get you pick you up an Iceman cowbell.
There you go, yeah. The cowbells are only $5.
His name is Michael Shockley. He is the senior writer, webmaster, and vice president of off-ice shenanigans for IcemanManiacs.com. And you are listening to Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley and the Dirty D here on 96.9 The Wire, the amusement park. We'll be right back.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.